Kathy Millett is my guest today, and she is the manager of Tomcat Ranch. She has an extensive background in land management and worked for the Nature Conservancy, among other many organizations. She's also serving on the board of several organizations, so she is one of the leaders in her field. She has been evolving in her thinking about land management in the course of the 8 years that she has worked for Tomcat Ranch, and you hear about that in this interview. We also touch on some new land management experiments and how these are being documented so that the information can be disseminated to other landowners for their use, and how their education foundation is training interns in regenerative land management. So it's a far-reaching interview, and it really gives you an idea of the depth and the reach of Tomcat Ranch in this time. This is Coastside Conversations, and my guest today is Wendy Millett, and Wendy works with Tomcat Ranch, and we're going to talk about Wendy and Tomcat Ranch. So Wendy, let's start with you. So what is your background and what is your role with Tomcat Ranch?
So I'm the director here at the ranch. I've been here 8 years, a little bit more. And my job is to oversee all the various programs and staff, keep everybody coordinated, work on the strategic programming, and coordinate with owners about what their goals and dreams are, and try and help us, you know, align our team to accomplish that. Mm-hmm.
Okay, that sounds like a very important place to be. So you have an overview of all the different things that are done at Tomcat Ranch, I would imagine. So let's just start with, you've been there 8 years. Can you tell me how things have changed over that time in terms of, say, growth or the programs that you started with that you're now you're doing something more or different?
Yeah, sure. You know, we started the ranch with the goal of doing the science to see if the promise of regenerative agriculture could actually be documented with science. And so that's where Point Blue Conservation Science, who you got to talk to Chelsea, I know, an earlier time, that's where they came in. And so we started at when I started, they had just started changing the grazing program and brought the science program in. So I've gotten to watch the change over time of our land management program using the grazing animals to achieve all the various co-benefits that we've been trying to do, and, you know, documenting the science. And so that's what the fun of it, that I've gotten to see the changes over time on the land. Mm-hmm. And I've also gotten to work with this team to help figure out how we work more with outside partners, figure out who else is doing this work, what can we learn from them, what's needed out in this field, you know, how can we develop a document, because we keep getting the same question from people. And so we say, like, oh, you want to know about the microbiology and you want it in an easy format, then Point Blue creates this beautiful guide about microbes and soil microbes. And so we've been able to respond to, hopefully, you know, our goal is to be helpful to the people who are doing land management every day. And so I've just been, you know, my job is to kind of keep my ear out for what are those ways that we can be helpful, who's doing what.
And that's great.
Yeah.
So who are the kinds of people that you work with? Is it like RCD and MROSD or things like that? Or is it individual landowners? Is it people who are just working on ranches wanting to learn how to do it better? Who do you work with?
It's kind of a range, actually. You know, we have a mission that is to raise healthy food on working lands in a way that regenerates the planet and inspires others to action. So following that mission, we've been able to reach out to a lot of different communities, you know, in the systems, in social justice and equity around food and school food and food access. You know, recently, especially with COVID, has been a huge priority.
Right.
Because of the fires, getting involved with people who are working, you know, land trusts who are and RCD and Cal Fire and Pine Ranch and others who are locally, who are Swanton Ranch, are trying to understand how do we manage these landscapes to be more resilient so that we don't get hit by these large catastrophic fires. And if we do, then how do we manage the land afterwards to minimize soil impacts and downstream issues for aquatic species? And so there's just a whole range.
Wow, there is. There really is a whole range. It's huge. Yeah. It's amazing. Well, it's awesome, all the things that you do. And it must be very time-consuming, it sounds like. Or you may be kind of coordinating many, many people on this ranch. So I'm just wondering, how many people are there who work with you?
Well, we've got quite a network of people. They're not just all on the ranch. Kevin Watt, who used to live locally here and ran Early Bird Ranch, he lives in Colorado now and works for us. And Point Blue, they have a team of 5 or 6 people who aren't always on the ranch every day, but they'll come down to work on science. There's people in San Francisco office that work for the Tomcat organizations. And so they help us on things. So
it's spread out. It's really out there. Yeah. That's great.
It's cool. Right. You get to use the best skills of different people in that network to sort of help move things forward. And that's been a real a benefit, for us to be able to borrow from people, so we don't have to have all our scientists on our team here on the ranch. So a ranch team can stay, reasonably small, bigger than it's an education ranch. So there's more people here for especially our intern and apprenticeship program, as opposed to straight staff people. So sometimes people think we have a lot of people. It's like, well, training interns and apprentices is also a lot of work.
Yeah. speaking of that, I know of a couple of people who've actually worked with you. And one of them is somebody that I worked with, Justin Miller, who's been involved with other ranches since then. But Justin Miller worked with you guys for a couple of years, I think. And he really learned a lot of valuable skills and I think has kind of leapfrogged from that to, leveraging that internship into working for a lot of other ranches and increasing the work that he's done for some nonprofits. So what is this internship program like? What are the things that you are training people to become?
Yeah. Well, it's a 3-month program in the summertime. It's called the internship. And then from the program, some years we will pick one or two people who want to stay on as apprentices for a 1-year program. Some apprentices then have stayed on for even as much as an additional year. And our goal is to train people to be advocates and change makers in the food system and in land management. So some people have come here and they've had a real interest in the food systems work, and Left Coast Fed, as you know, is our beef business. And some people really wanted to focus on going to farmers markets, understanding how local food works, meet customers, understanding those issues. And the current group of people, young people who are here, they're very focused on land management want to stay in agriculture. And so what they're learning is everything from how to read the land, to care for the livestock, and drive an ATV, think about just all of the facets of, we're doing a lot of soil trials, which Chelsea maybe have told you about. So they've been helping get those trials set down onto the ground, and then learning how to do some of the monitoring with the science team, just so they can really learn to watch the changes on the ground very carefully. Mm-hmm. So our hope that we can just provide a whole lot of the skills that they could be, that they'll need to be successful land managers of their own someday.
And so they then go off and work for other landowners or for other ranches or do their own enterprises. Is that it? You're setting them up for success someplace else.
Yes, exactly. We've had people who, one person I know went back to North Carolina to a family farm, which had sort of not been used very much for a bunch of time, but he was the generation who wanted to go back and do that. Mm-hmm. One person is working for a beef business, a grass-fed beef business out of the Midwest. One of the current people here, her partner is from a cattle operation, and so she wants to take what she's learning to go back into that business. So it ranges quite a lot.
Yeah, I believe it.
You get the idea. Yeah,
I think the learning the ATV part is what I can relate to. I think that would be a lot of fun to do, you know, but I am not.
Chainsaws, cattle chutes, driving a horse trailer, a livestock trailer, all that good stuff.
Yeah. You know, you can sort of imagine that being kind of a fun thing to do. But I realize, you know, based on some of the people I've met coming out of your organization, this is a really serious program. I mean, people come back with kind of state-of-the-art skills, which is awesome. And so is this a nonprofit venture? Is this like a part of an educational foundation that you have? Or is this, you know, just something that you guys do to help run your ranch? How does it fit into the big organization?
Yeah, it is the educational part of our operation. So, mm-hmm. You know, Kat, who is and Tom were owners, their passion is about helping young people, among many passions and interests, mm-hmm. but is helping people get into agriculture and into what we would consider a progressive style of managing land, and a way that, you know, how does, say, for example, conservation values and livestock business come together? And mm-hmm. so, you know, we study things from around the world, and that's the fun that we get to learn what other people are doing, and then share that with our apprentices and try things here. So they really set up this place. Kat calls it a learning lab, and she really encourages us to try things. You know, not all of them are going to be successful, but the goal is that if we happen to come upon something that's actually really useful, that we could share it with other people, and that might help neighbors, that might help other people in the state. We have a newsletter and a website, and we try to share things that we're doing.
That's great.
You know, we learn as much as we do share, just because there's amazing agriculturalists are the original innovators. And so it's fun
and
to be learning.
Yeah, the pioneers. They're the pioneers in so many things. Well, you know, in a way, Pescadero is a mecca for people experimenting. You know, we've got a lot of really interesting people here that you could share things with, like Pie Ranch. And there are some educational farms here, and there's some just people trying everything to be successful in organic farming, organic ranching, grass-fed beef, and that sort of thing. So it's awesome that you're trying to share that with people. And so do you actually invite people onto your land aside from the interns? I mean, are you having seminars, webinars, that sort of thing to disseminate this information?
We have before COVID. Yes. We have had ranchers. There's different programs out there. You know, one of the really amazing things you asked me about what I've learned since I started, and when I started, we called the land management sustainable management, and now we've used the term regenerative land management. And the basis of the regenerative term is really about giving back to the land and helping to restore land health. And soil is the basis for that. And I know you talked to Chelsea a lot about that.
Yeah, that was so interesting. You know, the community of life that's under the ground, it's just really kind of amazing. So yeah, that was a real interesting perspective. But when you think about it, that's what you guys are working with, is kind of improving the ground, you know, improving the soil's life. It's a really interesting concept. It feeds into the land management thing too. You know, in other words, if you're actually working very intentionally to improve soil, improve the land itself, you are managing the land differently, right?
You got it. And that's what, to answer your question about, you know, whether we have people out here, we've had soil scientists out here from different parts of the world. We've had land management people who are doing things that, so we can learn from them, but we've been able to invite other local ranchers, California people, other places. And we're happy to share it, because really we're all learning this together, because it really is a, you know, kind of a renaissance in agriculture to learn more about the soil. And thank goodness Chelsea and others are helping us find our way along that as well. Cause you know, the ranchers and farmers see it from a perspective of every day on the ground when they're out there. You know, they have so much insight, but don't even always have words to know what is that process that's happening. And so we're trying to bring those communities together so we can deepen the learning. And
I love the word renaissance that you used, because I see it too. It's like, this is a burgeoning new society in a sense, this back to the land kind of generation, where everybody's trying to make the earth a better place. And there's a real like devotion almost to taking what, you know, taking what has been done, which is kind of difficult and harmful to the soil in some cases, and like putting back in the things that the soil needs. So it's almost a rebirth, you could say, renaissance of the land itself, which is really amazing. It's awesome.
Yeah. Well, and I would be remiss. I mean, the indigenous people have been doing these kind of practices.
That's right.
So a little slow, but
yeah, we're getting there. We're getting back. Yeah, we're getting back to the way they did it for thousands of years. But, you know, let's face it, we're adding some science to it and some proof to it that makes it something that now can be, you know, everybody can be educated on it and start using these approaches. But you're right. And that does come bring up, like I was talking to Chelsea about the prescribed burns. I mean, the Native Americans did prescribed burns, or controlled burns, however you want to put it, for thousands and thousands of years, in this rotational approach that allowed them to use the products of that in various aspects of their life. And just amazing, you know, that we're just beginning to find it. So 200 years later, after we dismissed the American, the Native American experience, we're not just coming back to it. We are giving it a rebirth. But I think it's coming back better, in the sense that there's a lot more science to it. There's a lot more understanding to it. There's a dissemination of knowledge that's being shared more broadly. I think it's actually a triumph, in a sense. It's a tribute to what the Native Americans did, but then standing on the shoulders of giants, as they say, you know, now moving on from that and getting a lot better at it, although it's slow, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, the honoring and the living in harmony with the land is something that we've got to get a lot better at. So I think, to your point, we have to learn from all kinds of practices, really, and from everybody who's a thought about how to do this. We just have to figure out how to get that, you know, get ourselves in a better place where we really do care and respect and steward the lands.
Yeah. And it feels a lot better. I mean, when you realize that by investing in the land in special ways, you get more out of it. You know, I mean, that's the part that people are beginning to see. This is not like a sacrifice to farmers. This is a benefit to the farmers and the ranchers, right? And that's something that was kind of a discovery. People thought, well, this is a better way to do it in terms of health, right? I think organic farming started from the standpoint that it's more nutritious to eat food that's based on real whole enriched soils. But now we're finding that treating the land well is good in every respect for the land and for us, not just from the standpoint of foods, but hey, just the not having debris flows, not having wildfires, not having the catastrophes that, you know, we otherwise live through. So it just reaps so many benefits. It's kind of amazing. So it's, yeah, it's important.
And we love to talk about that co-benefits message. It is for farmers and ranchers, but it's also for all people. And I feel like maybe we don't know as much about, you know, the benefits that the, you know, nature does provide for us, healthy water and mm-hmm. and our air and our climate and the food that we raise. So we love to tell the story about the multiple benefits of managing the land in a way that actually gives back to us. I like to say, like, if we care for the land, it will care for us. And
mm-hmm. That's a great way of putting it. Yeah, I like it. That's very succinct. Yeah, one of the things that I learned from, I watched a webinar, or I guess you could say like a YouTube video of an Amundsen, kind of a catalog of all the different things that they could reap from having these rotational kinds of prescribed burns. And then I found out that tribes in the northern part of California, they gleaned different things from those prescribed burns, but it was similar. And the whole West Coast, all of the different tribes and cultures did that. And so, you know, then we see that we've kind of let the forest kind of take over, that we need to be more supportive of the things that require fire or that do well in sun. And suddenly, as we learn that, our lives are getting better. I mean, even from the standpoint of beauty, you know, seeing wildflowers, seeing more animals in the forest. It's amazing how it opens things up, really. It's really kind of fun to see. So, we don't want it to be wildfires, but we want, you know, we want that openness.
Yeah. Well, and we love to talk about photosynthesis, which might sound a little nerdy, but, you know, that's nature's technology to bring carbon out of the air and bring it down into the soil. And then it feeds the microbes, and then it creates that diversity of life, you know, below ground, but also above ground. And then gets to what you just said, you know, if we have diversity below ground and above ground, then we have all of the animals and hopefully all the different people diversity as well. That's part of the whole system and a healthy system, a healthy mm-hmm. food system.
Right. I think one of the things that we had a hard time with over the last, you know, 100 or 200 years, our evolution was painfully slow, partly because at first we didn't have any understanding or appreciation of the land. Then as we became appreciative of it, we didn't want to touch it. We thought, oh, it's sacred the way it is. It's better not to do anything. Now we're coming to this really big shift of, yes, we have to manage the land for its sake as well as our own. And that, I think, was like, as you say, it's a renaissance. It's a discovery in a way that, you know, it's going back to the way it was with the Native Americans and kind of admitting, okay, managing the land can be a good thing if we do it right, right? It's good for the soil. It's good for the land. It's good for the animals. It's good for us. And that's, I think, a happy conclusion. You know, at first we didn't think so.
There's also places where we haven't disturbed it, and so we might not need to manage it much. So, in our approach, which we refer to typically as holistic management or adaptive management, you always talk about like, what does that place need? What's the right management action and the right tool at the right time and place? And there may be, and Point Blue would say this too, you know, there are places that we are very enthusiastic about seeing in a grazing regime, because there's already been significance just to that landscape. But there's also places on the coast, grasslands, especially where there's, you know, extensive native perennial grasses, where we wouldn't advocate necessarily for grazing of those places, because it might not need that disturbance. You know, it's just nature's always in movement. And so having that understanding of like, what's the right place for us to insert ourselves in a way that's beneficial. Mm-hmm. So it's complicated. It makes it fun and fascinating endlessly.
Yeah. And I guess constantly learning, right?
Constantly learning. Yes.
Yeah. So one of the things that I noticed, in getting some background on this, is that you guys are associated with some pretty large organizations, like the World Bank, Western Landowners Alliance, et cetera. How are you working with these organizations? Is this just sharing of knowledge? Is this demonstrations? What is it?
It depends. Again, everything, because there's different organizations. There's quite a lot of organizations who are on the journey with us to understand more about land management practices, soil-based regenerative agriculture practices. And so we network with those so we can share questions. What are we learning? What are you learning? What are you trying? So there's a lot of that going on. We're working with a bunch of universities who are interested in regenerative agriculture and most specifically the science about it. And same thing, if we have a question or, you know, there's a topic area that we all collectively are curious about. Like right now, there's something called, it's a soil amendment called BEAM, Biologically Enhanced Ag Material. BEAM is the acronym. And
Chico that sounds State, pretty generic, you know?
Yeah, right?
Yeah. That's pretty good.
So Chico State has a regenerative agriculture center. It's one of the, that's kind of a rare thing in the U.S. To have that. And so one of the things they're studying quite a lot is BEAM, and then putting together a network of other places, you know, experimental ranches like ours, or other university examples, so that we can all learn, because every ecotype is different. And so how does it apply in a Mediterranean habitat like where we are, where we have, you know, many, many, many months of dry? Right. How does it compare to perennial grass? We're going to do an experiment with a grass called Kernza, which there's an organization in the Midwest called the Land Institute, and their thing is, where does Kernza work? And so we partner with them to figure out how's it work in California, because they have a lot of applications in the Midwest. It's so that's, you know, that's pretty intentional, the organizations who we spend time with, because we're trying to learn from each other. Or on the educational side, other programs that have apprenticeship programs. Well, what are you learning? And what do we do if somebody graduates from our program and they want to go somewhere else? Western Landowners Alliance is a network of Western ranchers, landowners, and maybe one of those folks wants to have somebody who's trained to go to their ranch. So, you know, it would be a place we could send resumes and trying to help the people who've trained get to their next ranch. So just ideas like that, where we try to get to work with quite a range of people.
Wow. So I'm talking to Wendy Millett, who is the ranch manager for Tomcat Ranch, and it's fascinating the reach that your ranch has in terms of its education and research and the groundwork that you guys are doing in regenerative agriculture. There is something you have called a regenerative toolkit. What is that? Is that just, is here you go, rancher, this is what you do? How does that work?
Yeah, it's not that sophisticated, honestly, but we get lots of people who email us or call us and want to know, well, what is regenerative agriculture and how does it work and how would I do it and what does it mean? And so the toolkit is as simple as here's a bunch of articles to read, if that's really what they're asking for. But ones that we've read and that we think are going to be helpful, because it's confusing out there on any topic. You know, you go online and whoa.
Yeah.
We try to curate, so to speak, those resources and be able to provide them.
That's really a great thing.
It's helpful for folks, yeah. Books that we read, and so we try to put in our newsletter, like sometimes we say, books that we're reading right now. And
That's great, yeah.
So the toolkit includes things like that, the microbe guide that, you know, Chelsea and the point and Mel, who you guys talked about last
week. Yes, yeah.
Beautiful, amazing grazing guide. We're working on a document because we've had a lot of inquiries from landowners who want to do, you know, look into whether they could lease their property to somebody to manage to do more of a regenerative grazing program. Because they want to see if they can, you know, increase carbon, increase their biodiversity, maybe go towards a grass-fed, 100% grass-fed beef operation. And so we've got some guidance documents to help people on that. And so just that's our toolkit, stuff that we think is good to share and just save other people effort.
It helps the movement. You know, we call it a local revolution. There is a local revolution in terms of people wanting things locally grown, wanting grass-fed beef that's from around where they are. You know, learning how to farm regeneratively is part of it. And so having a support, having resources, having information, this is so valuable. I mean, this is really how the movement keeps going, right? So I think it's great what Tomcat is doing. I'm pretty impressed that you guys have such a huge reach and that you're into so many things. It's awesome.
Well, we're really lucky. We're encouraged and, you know, paid by the family who owns it to do that work here to try and be helpful and to learn together and share it. So we feel pretty lucky, honestly, that we get to do this. We're not experts. We're just learning on the journey together. But it's an amazing group of people
that's
who are working in the space. So, yeah.
Well, you know, thank you so much, Wendy, for filling me in on all this. And I think the community is going to be interested. I think there's a lot of people who would be interested in what you guys are doing. And it sounds like you're an amazing organization and that you're a resource to us. So I appreciate it. A resource to our community as well as to many other people. So I think it's great. And thank you for your time today, for sharing all that. We can continue the conversation. I know I'm going to be talking to other people in your organization, probably, hopefully, some Native American sources in terms of the prescribed burning. So I look forward to that.
Well, thanks for the time and your interest. It's wonderful to get a chance to talk to you.
You know what's so great is you guys are right here in Pescadero. There is an amazing place. So thank you so much, Wendy.
Okay.
All right. Talk to you soon. Thanks a lot. This has been one of several interviews that will be done in regard to prescribed burns, cultural burning, and the mitigations that are taking place now in order to prevent the wildfires that struck in a catastrophic way in our area in August. So one of the many experiments that Tomcat Ranch is working on is prescribed burns, and we will hopefully be talking to some tribal members of the Amamutsun soon in order to get their perspective and the history on this practice.